Hey, this is Norman, and welcome to Run With Horses. Hope you're having a great day. Got a great quote for you today. If you're not, maybe it'll be encouraging to you. It's by John Maxwell, who wrote the book, The 17 Indisputable Laws of Teamwork. Are you on a team? If you're part of a family or if you work in an office, you're probably part of a team. Well, it says, most people's natural inclination is to judge themselves according to their best qualities while they measure others by their worst. As a result, they point to areas where their teammates need to grow. But the truth is that everyone is responsible for his own growth first. You know, that's very true. Most of us look at ourselves and we have a very high opinion of ourselves. We really, really, really like ourselves a lot. I don't know if you've noticed that about people. And we don't really love others enough. I think that's one of the reasons that the most repeated command in the New Testament is to love one another. We never seem to grow out of this childlike view that we're the center of the world. You see it in 2 and 3 year olds where just everything revolves around them. No patience, no willingness to wait on anybody else. If I want it, I want it now. And it's just surprising to me how many adults are in the same place today. People are people that should be adults. I'm not sure our definition of adult maybe has changed. Seems like adults used to be still in their late teens. You could have someone consider them an adult, and now you have people that are 35 and live at home with their parents and don't have any responsibility, and it's hard to consider them adult, isn't it? But the point here is each of us do need to be responsible for ourselves. And I think if you're responsible for yourself and you're really growing, then part of our growth should be that we grow in our ability to love other people. And it is important to, if you're in a leadership position, to evaluate other people and to help them to grow, but to lay aside our critical spirit. That's not one of the gifts that needs to be spread around. And think well of other people. Think the best of other people. Observe the places where they're doing really well. And I know, just personally, this is not something I do well at. My personality, I would tend to be more judgmental and more critical, and I want people to do better. And the way that comes across is often as criticism, and I need to work on that. And I think it's a good thing for all of us to do our best to do our part well, to take our role seriously, but then also to give a lot of grace to other people and those around us. And I think that's always going to be better in the long run than pointing out every little area where the people around you need to grow. So take some steps of faith this week and trust that your fellow man, your family member, your coworker, that person at church who annoys you, that's not their whole intention of life, is not to make your life miserable. But take a step of faith and believe in them. Trust that they have good qualities, and that let them know they have gifts that God has given them that the church needs. They have ability to serve others, and they are doing well in some areas if we really look for it. So this week, look for it. This week in news and culture, I found an article that I thought was pretty interesting. I'd seen this somewhere before, and I couldn't find it, so I kind of searched for it, and I found it on the Christian Post website. It's an article by Leonardo Blair, and the title is, More Pastors Say They Have Considered Quitting, Cite Stress, Loneliness, and Politics. And this is a study. It's not a great title there, is it? I wonder if there was a better title on there. Here's what he says. Driven to despair by stress, loneliness, political divisions, and other worries like their church being in decline, more pastors now say they are considering quitting their jobs compared to a year ago. This is from new data released by the Barna Group. They do a lot of research related to churches. So this research was conducted in January 2021 and March 2022. And it shows how the share of pastors who have given serious consideration to quitting being in full-time ministry within the last year has increased from 29% in 2021 to 42% in March of this year. Are you kidding me? That is crazy. 29%, I think that's a lot. I mean, can you imagine? That's crazy. 29% of pastors in 2021 were thinking about quitting. And I'd say, well, I don't know what it was before then. I don't know what it was in 2019 or 2018. But if I only heard that figure, I would say, well, you know, you're in the middle of the pandemic and the coronavirus has caused a lot of problems. And yeah, just I can see how that would be pretty high. But this year, it's 42%. That's crazy high. That's more than one out of every three pastors is seriously thinking about quitting. Well, I have to ask you the question, how's your pastor doing? I can't ask that here because I suppose that would be me. I suppose it depends. I think about it. In the last year, if I had been on that survey, would I ever have answered that I was thinking about quitting? And there might have been some time that I was. There definitely have been some difficulties in the last, I don't know, several months of 2022 and 2021 and 2020. So it adds up. But how is your pastor doing? If you don't know, maybe you should ask. Do you have the relationship with your pastor that you can really to talk to him about things like that? Somebody in the church has to. And I think that's part of what's not directly said in this article, at least. And I'm not sure if it was part of the study or not. But what kind of relationship do people have with their pastor? A lot of pastors feel like they're isolated because they're in a unique position. They feel like they can't be friends with people in the church. And I don't have that. I don't feel that way at all. I feel like we're all in the same place. And maybe I'm a step or two ahead of somebody in my church, but I might not be. It's my role to help and to serve them. But I don't see it as I'm separated by the rest of the church in any way. So I don't have that. But some people do. And if they do, it is much more likely they're going to feel a little bit of this loneliness that this study talks about. But some of the questions you should ask. When's the last time your pastor had a day off? And I know personally I struggle with this because you don't really clock in and clock out. It depends on the week. It depends on what's going on. Work could begin early and work could go late. You can get phone calls well after supper and even after bed. And you can get phone calls before you wake up or in the middle of the night or in the middle of lunch. And you have things that you're planning and doing. So even if you're not working hard on something, you're still having to think about it. I know I like to jog. Okay, I don't really like to jog a lot, but I jog because it's good for me. And so one way of distracting myself from the discomfort of jogging is I'll use that time as prayer time for the church or as planning time. I have in the past occasionally carried even a small handheld recorder because I'm brainstorming something and I don't want to lose it. I know I forgot that one time when I had planning on doing some brainstorming and I was 3-4 miles from the house and realized, this is a great idea. And I didn't have my recorder. And I was thinking, how can I remember? And I kept thinking of other things related to it on the way back. And I really picked up the pace to get home so I wouldn't forget what I was thinking. So I try to carry the recorder. But what that means is I'm out on that jog, and it could be a relaxing, enjoyable time for some people. Not for me, really. But I end up, that's work time. It's not time away from the job. And I think a lot of pastors have a role where there's not a time to really genuinely step back. I personally find a day off is almost not sufficient even to stop thinking about the things that I need to be doing or should be doing, or there's things that are coming up, or have we planned this yet? And really, when we have taken a vacation occasionally, it really takes 2 or 3 days to get let go of that stuff and then feel like, hey, I can have a day. And I've thought through everything that I needed to think through, and I've written it down, I've got notes, and I can take the day off. So when's the last time your pastor had an extended vacation? When there wasn't something planned the day he got back. I've heard pastors have that where they're gone for a week and then they get back on a Saturday, and then Sunday they have a full day. So part of their week off was probably spent preparing for Sunday. So consider that when you encourage your pastor to take a day or a day off, a week off, a couple of weeks off. Don't pile them with stuff right when they get back. But this is part of that dealing with the stress and the pressures of their role. And this article goes on and says that a majority of the pastors who have not considered quitting cite strong family and community support and confidence in their ability as leaders. So there's three things there. you do want to encourage your pastor. You also want to encourage his family and really support the family, because the family, if they're doing well, is really going to support the pastor in difficult times. And the church needs to band together to support your pastor. You may not agree with everything he says, but you need to do it when you need to disagree in a way that shows that you support him, that you're behind him. They really do need your care. And then that last part is confidence in their ability as leaders. One of the things that you can do is offer to pay for your pastor, ideally your pastor and his wife or your pastor and his family, maybe send them to a conference, send them to some training where they get support in their role as a leader, have a chance to talk to other leaders and be encouraged and gain new skills, continue to grow in their ability to lead. But at the same time, you can combine that with family time. Send them somewhere where it's, if it's in the winter, nice and warm would be awesome. Unless, of course, they like winter sports, and then send them to Canada. don't send me to Canada. I don't want to go. I'm a summer guy. So definitely I can attest to the value of family support. I don't know if I could have hung in there for 20 years of life in ministry in Japan without my wife's support. Susan has been awesome. She's stood by me in thick and thin and difficulties and easy times and fun times and times when we cried and times when we laughed. And this has been something that we have approached together 100%. And I try not to do a whole lot without her support and without really us working together. I mean, it's meant to be life together. And so even we're missionaries, which means we go back to the States on furlough. We're getting ready to do that now. And one of our commitments early on was that this was a family endeavor. And we committed to that before we actually had children, that as we traveled on furlough, my wife was pregnant with our oldest daughter, Chloe, and we committed to do as much as possible to not travel, for me not to travel without Susan and Chloe. So we took 2 weeks off when Chloe was born, and her third Sunday alive, our third Sunday out of the womb, she was in a church. And that was her, the rest of her first year of life was pre-filled, so she had lots and lots of visits with new people. But we did that as a family, and every furlough we've gone back, and I have not allowed our family to stay in one place and then I travel without them. We've traveled almost 100% of the time together. There have been only maybe two trips that I can think of off the top of my head where Susan and I went without the kids. We haven't even left them very often. And when we have left them, we've left them with our grandparent, with their grandparents, with my parents or her parents, so that they're still with family and they're there for a reason. That's something they need to do, is build those relationships. So our family has been hugely important. And our view of the family has been hugely important in maintaining proper focus and being able to recover from the stress of life and ministry. So we try to spend a lot of time working together with our kids. You know, I really feel like my primary role is as a disciple maker. And if that's true, then my primary disciples are my children. So we don't look at them as a hindrance, but we look for those opportunities just like we look for opportunities with other people. How can we spend time with them? So my kids do karate, and they've been doing it for 5 years, and for years, the drive to and from karate is part of the times we're talking to the kids about different things in life and how they're doing. And I might not have seen them that much during the day, so I ask about school and things like that. We've done music together as a family, and that's, again, another family project that we've done. And we go to concerts, and we put on concerts. And we have tried to look at serving and doing life together as a family. So that really is hugely important. And then the church support for your pastor is hugely important too. We have always had a very small community here. This is one of the things that hasn't been a big help maybe to me, because we don't have very many people, and we have a lot of newer believers usually, or less mature believers. So there is a case for missionaries really being on teams, and I really am a strong proponent of missionaries being together in teams of two or three units, say the two or three families or two families in a single, but to be together. Part of it is this support, to be able to support each other in ministry. And definitely, you need to make sure that your pastor, as a church, you need to make sure that your pastor knows that you support him. One of the people who worked with Barna, Joe Jensen, he told the Christian Post that a growing number of pastors are looking to leave their full-time positions, and the fact that it's still growing is a huge cause for alarm. So he says, this particular stat, this is the highest we've ever seen it. And he went on to explain that pastors in general, they shy away from counseling and mentoring, and it's just difficult for pastors. Said pastors traditionally don't feel comfortable for a number of reasons to seek out counseling or to seek out mentoring or help of some kind. And the pastor needs to understand and know within the church community, within his church, that it's okay for the pastor to say, hey, I need help. I need some counseling. I'm struggling emotionally. I've got some things I don't know how to deal with. He needs to be able to say that to his church. And this Joe Jensen said, to be frank, for whatever reason, a lot of pastors don't feel comfortable being vulnerable within a leadership context. I really think the church needs to communicate and say, hey, pastor, it's okay not to be okay. And I agree 100% with what Joe's saying here, that it's true, one, that pastors don't feel comfortable being vulnerable. They don't feel safe to tell the church, I'm not doing well. And partly it's the pressure of a church that everyone is probably feels the same way, particularly in the last couple of years. No one's doing really well. Our society has just gone crazy in multiple respects. So the pastor feels that way, but also the church members feel that way. And he knows that. So he wants to be a help to them, and part of that is feeling like I need to be strong. I need to be strong for the church. I need to be able to lift them up and encourage them. And I know he wants to do that, but it's very difficult if he feels like I don't have a place to say, hey, I'm really struggling. There are times when it's just too much. How do you build the culture in your church where it's okay for your pastor to say, I'm just having a rough time? You need to be able to say, as Joe said, hey, pastor, it's okay not to be okay. And maybe you can add, hey, I got your back, brother. We're in this together. And part of the unity of the church, it's not just the members. It's the pastor. He is part of this unity. He is part of the church. And it's important that the church be unified. And this is just a difficult time. And there are a lot of difficulties for the pastor. So they mentioned four things in this article: stress, loneliness, political divisions, and worries, and gave an example like the church being in decline. So stress is obviously a huge, huge thing for pastors. You have people come to you, and people tend to seek out the pastor at their worst. You have their best too. You have people come to you for weddings, but you have people come to you with the funerals. You have people come to you with marriages that are falling apart. You have people come to you with their kids are into drugs, or getting in trouble with the law. Or there's all these things where the families are bringing the worst of life to the pastor for advice and for encouragement, for prayer, and definitely that's his role. But it's easy to understand how that's stressful. That's difficult to deal with day in and day out. And then when you feel like on top of all the stress, you don't have someone really to talk to, you can see where the loneliness comes from. You have a mountain of worries and fears stacking up, and you don't know how to deal with them. Some of them are so far beyond your control that you really don't need to feel like this is something to deal with. I think some pastors struggle to feel like I need to fix everybody's problem, and you can't do that, and you're not supposed to do that. We are a vehicle for a vessel for God's word. We are his hands and feet, but ultimately God is the one that does the work, and people need to respond directly to God. So we don't need to carry all that weight, but we do, and that leads to loneliness when you feel like I'm having to carry all this by myself and carry the weight of the church on your shoulders. And then you add to those two, which are just the normal things of church life that go on year in and year out for long term, but you also have political divisions from the last well, forever. In my lifetime, it's always been the huge political divisions, but it seems like they've gotten worse. And I know when I was in college, I had a roommate, and we were on different sides of political spectrum, although I'm largely not really a political person. I do follow stuff, and I would talk to him and realize, yeah, we're just in really different places. But we could talk about it. We could disagree vehemently, but then we could go have pizza. And we were still friends, and we're still friends. We have stopped by a couple of our furloughs to stop by and say hello and see him and his kids and things like that. And it's interesting to see how he's changed his political views over the years, and I've changed mine. I would say I'm lean much more libertarian than I ever did growing up or in college at that time. So I've changed my views as well. Largely, I stay out of it. I don't think that's the number one thing that I want to be worried about and concerned about. There are enough other things that are eternal problems and eternal things that take up my time that I don't have a lot of extra time and energy that I want to give to political issues. And then the last thing I mentioned is other worries. For example, the church being in decline, or the church being about to split over the color of the carpet is always the old joke. So issues within the church, which are largely relationship-based. I mean, the church being in decline could be for other reasons. You could have an area where the population is getting older and you just have not a lot of young people coming, and that can be a factor in some areas. But a lot of times, the worries in the church are people not getting along or the church not really having any kind of influence in the community. And the pastor would naturally feel like he's primarily responsible for that. And he does have a huge role in leading toward that, but the church has to be invested in that too. So you look at these four things and say, yeah, it is a lot. You can understand how pastors are struggling. The question is, what do we do about it? Well, what do you do about it? I'm here, and I'm trying to watch my back and make sure that I have the people to support me and that I can support, reaching out to other pastors and things like that. But how do you support your pastor? If you're in the States, or you're in Australia or Europe or somewhere where that speaks English, if you're listening to this, how do you support your pastor? What does that look like? How willing is your pastor to be supported? And some of it is, how often do you tell him you're praying for him? Do you let him know that he can call you anytime? Do you let him know that, I understand, go through the flu season, hey, you're going to get sick sometime. Hey, let the church know we can let you take a day off. It's all right. You don't have to be 100% all the time. We understand you're human. How are you doing at letting your pastor know that you're there for him? He's there for you day in and day out. How do you let him know that you've got his back? All right, today in Living Theology, I'm going to make this short because the culture news section was kind of long, but thinking about God, theology proper, and God's names. What does God call himself in the Bible? So there are three big ones that you get, at least when you look at the Old Testament, you look at the Jewish culture. Three names. The first one, the most general, it's not specific just to God. It's used for other gods in the Old Testament as well, is Elohim. It means like strong one. And its ending, it's a plural, but some people try to take that to say that it's proof of the Trinity, but it's not necessarily proof of the Trinity, but it definitely allows for the Trinity in the New Testament. And Elohim occurs over 2,500 times in the Old Testament, so it's kind of a general name of God. The second one is the most specific name for God. If Elohim is the most general, then Jehovah is the most specific. And the interesting thing about Jehovah is that's not necessarily how you pronounce it. We take that. That's how we've pronounced it in English. There are four consonants, Hebrew consonants, and I don't even know how you talk about this. It's YHWH, if we're putting it into the Roman letters. And then the vowels from another name for God, Adonai. And then they combine those and say it's Yahweh or Jehovah. So a lot of people say it should be pronounced Yahweh instead of Jehovah. Either way, pronunciation aside, it really has two really important things we get from that. One, it's really, really common. Nearly 7,000 times you see Yahweh or Jehovah in the Old Testament. But it emphasizes the eternality of God, and it also has a special connotation, a relationship of Israel to her Redeemer. It is particularly associated with God's holiness and His hatred of sin and with His provision of redemption. So those three things are really, really, really important. God's holiness, His hatred of sin, and His provision of redemption. And then the third name, just mention it, Adonai. This is the name which the Jews, when they talked about, or when they were reading those four letters, make up Yahweh, when they read the scriptures, what they would do, instead of trying to pronounce that, they just would say Adonai. And it is a basic word for God that means Lord or Master. So when it refers to God's relationship with men, it really conveys the idea of His absolute authority. So these three words are, three names are the most common ones you see for God. And then we do have a lot of examples of these compound words using either Yahweh or El from Elohim. El Elyon, the Most High. El Olam, the Everlasting God. El Shaddai, the Almighty God. So these are more descriptive of God. We learn something about God based on these words, based on these names, these titles. They're a little closer to titles maybe than names. You know, it's God the Everlasting, God the Almighty. Yahweh, Jehovah Jireh, the Lord provides. Jehovah Nissi, the Lord is my banner. Jehovah Shalom, the Lord is peace. So you learn something about God through these titles. It's an interesting study, if you haven't done it, to go through the Old Testament and look up all of the titles and descriptions of God, all the names of God in the Old Testament, and see what does each one of these tell us about God. And as you do that, and then think about how to incorporate that into your prayer life, as you learn more about God and who He is and what He has done, and these titles emphasize who He is and what He's done, then you can take that and make that a prayer of praise back to our Almighty, loving God.